I'm Dean Newland, and welcome to the Business of Intuition, where I coach, facilitate, train, and speak on the hard science and meaningful experience of intuitive leadership in business, so you can make better decisions, forge real connections, and creatively solve problems to amplify your impact and simplify your life. Welcome to the Business of Intuition.
The subconscious mind doesn't know the difference between a real or an imagined event. This is why Olympic skiers can take time off of their runs by imagining skiing the course beforehand, or why prisoners who play imaginary golf games in their minds while they're incarcerated leave prison having taken several strokes off of their game, or why Jeff Bezos says every big thing started as a small idea. Hard work, networking, skill, adaptability all play important roles in our success. However, the future is created by seeing it before it's a reality. And my next guest on the Business of Intuition has mastered that skill. Daniel Mangina is an international speaker, best-selling author, broadcaster, and coach. He is best known for his highly successful Micro 2 Millions program, being the author of Stepping Beyond Intention and his Do It With Dan and Beyond Success podcasts. He is a completely self-made person and has spent decades perfecting his world-class coaching methodology. And his mission is to spearhead an evolutionary uplift in universal consciousness by awakening people to the importance of their unique role and enabling them to manifest their dream life. Daniel Mangina on the Business of Intuition. So, Daniel, I am so pleased to be able to meet you. I know that you're down in Cabo, probably working on your tan, and we're up here in Oregon, you know, looking for snow.
But chocolate.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You look great, man. You look great. So I know people can only hear you and they can tell, this guy's got a little different accent. But I guess I'm going to start off with, I mean, you do a lot of great work. You've got a wonderful business and you're doing a lot of good in the world. But how did you get here? I mean, I always find that there's some sort of a story that sort of turns a person on the dime and gets them into a place that moves them into a career, moves them into a purpose in their life. I know that I've had it. I know that other people we've talked to on this podcast have talked about it. But is there a story you might be able to share with us that kind of gives us a flavor about who you are and why you do what you do?
Sure thing. So I've never really had an actual job. Yeah. I worked in a cinema when I was a teenager. I'd already taught myself to make computers. I was an entrepreneur from very early, so I didn't need the money. I liked working in the cinema. It was cool. I met my two best friends, Nathan and Jamie. I got free ice cream and popcorn. I got to meet interesting people. Cool. And then this will form part of the story. After making and losing everything twice by the age of 23. Yeah. I made multi-million twice by 23 and lost it twice by 23. After that, I was rebuilding my life and I worked in a call center for 6 months whilst I was building up my last business. I built up again to 7-figure-a-year business. So yeah, entrepreneurship as an idea is just all I've really known. I've never done the corporate ladder.
Yeah.
I nearly gave up after losing everything the second time. I was like, okay, this isn't for me. There's a lot more to that. In my TED talk, I talk about that. There was some suicidal ideation. There was coming back up from nothing. But 13th of February, 2018, I had this beautiful experience on a meditation retreat down in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where I saw viscerally, almost like a virtual reality experience, what would happen if I took everything that I'd been through and actually shared it with people and how fulfilling and meaningful that would be. And it sounds like, I saw my purpose in a virtual reality simulation, but I really, really did. It was like being in this fully immersive experience. That day, I shut down my last business. Within a month and a half, I packed up the house. I took a backpack, a suitcase, and a suit carrier and went around the world teaching my work.
All right. I got to stop for a second here and get some pieces of this pie together, because I want to go back to that aha moment you talked about. What were your businesses that you had that you said you lost everything twice. What were you doing then?
So the first business, we had importing and exporting goods. So we used letters of credit to get like crates of orange juice and ship it here, and coffee, and we're doing real estate in London. We had a training company. What else did we do? God, we're buying bulk cars at auction and selling those off. Can't remember. I mean, I was 19 years old at the time. You know, we're going back 23 years or whatever it was. So that's what I was doing at the time. Then we didn't have the licensing we didn't have. So we ended up getting shut down because we didn't have all the right licenses for what we're doing.
Okay.
Which could have been resolved a lot more peacefully. Was I not walking around saying, do you know who you're talking to? I mean, I was a 20-year-old kid, I think, by the time that happened. Do you know who you're talking to? Do you know who I am? Oh, we know who you are. So we're going to just shut that down and you're not getting it back. So that was time number one. Okay. Second time, because I was this precocious 20-year-old kid. And so people were literally paying me $1,000 an hour, £1,000 an hour to pick my brain. I was getting equity stakes in businesses, but doing problem solving for them. I was putting people together and doing project funding and doing some strategizing. And I managed to put together about $4.5 million. But I tried to be clever because everything had gone with the licensing before and put it in different people's names. And then they stole everything. So the first time I lost everything because the government took it. And the second time people that I trusted took everything. So that's how I lost everything twice.
I'm fascinated by is how does a 20-year-old kid, because my kid's 20, I have a 21-year-old kid. Yeah. How did you get this knowledge? I mean, where did that come from? I mean, was that something you picked up? Was it through your meditation? How did you access these principles to be able to help these people become so successful?
I was reading Think and Grow Rich when I was 16 or 17 years old. That's who I was. I was late diagnosed with Asperger's. I wasn't diagnosed until I was 27. So as a teenager, I wasn't off getting drunk with friends. That didn't make any sense to me. I was like just learning stuff. I was like a super geek. Like I said, I taught myself to make computers when I was 13. So I was making computers and selling those and doing. There's a newspaper called The Loot in England. I don't know if they're still in circulation now, but they certainly were, you know, all those years ago, where you could place an advert for free for something that you had for sale. So I would put together generic computer configurations, post them for free in the newspaper. And one time I even managed to, and I was a spotty nose, I think I was 14 or 15 years old, maybe 14. I managed to like sell this £10,000 package of laptops and printers to this company. Mm. And they didn't know that they were dealing with a teenager. And I drop shipped. I found a company that could drop ship the configuration, Novatech Computers out of Southampton. They had unbranded laptops. So that's what I was doing, basically. I started really young.
So, all right. So then now you fast forward, you have this epiphany. You sort of, you realize that your life is going to take a pivot, but you want to teach that which you've learned. Mm-hmm. What is your process? What are you essentially, what is your purpose now? What are you trying to impart on others?
Mm-hmm. So the principle, the primary principle under everything is that abundance is our natural state. And so I invite everyone, just look at nature. In nature, nothing struggles. Nothing is in a space of lack. The only time nature comes out of balance is when humans get involved. If nature's left to its own devices, even when you look at those things, when you have those abandoned towns, nature just comes in and just becomes abundantly, just takes over the place and makes, there's a crack in the ground, something will grow through it. We've created this ego-driven disconnect between us and nature that has us hustling, subjugating others, kill or be killed in business, yeah, greed and fear. I'm really passionate about returning people to understanding that our natural birthright of abundance does not require hustling. It just requires us to be in flow and to do the natural thing of creating value, more life to others, facilitating the solving of problems and the free flow of others into the things that they're doing in their life. When we do that, abundance flows naturally. And that's what we do through our programs, through workshops. My books are all about that. The podcast, we encourage it through different angles. And that's what I get to do every day.
Fantastic. It sounds like there's definitely some synergies of what you do and what we do. Mm-hmm. And I'm fascinated by this. So what, I mean, can you give us a little bit more, like if I'm a listener to this and I'm saying, all right, Daniel, you've got me interested. You're a smart guy. You've done a lot of cool things. You've had some failures or successes from what you've been able to create out of those big, huge lessons, as you may call them. Mm-hmm. And you're doing quite well for yourself. And I understand the idea about abundance is our natural state. I believe in that. Mm-hmm. How do you work with an individual to get past those old mindsets that have been holding them back in the past?
So the first thing is, I invite people to look at, where does mindset emerge from? Where does it start? And mindset doesn't come from nowhere. Mindset, or how the mind is set up, there was content, there was data that was imprinted, and that was accepted. So what I was inviting to do is to look at the way that it was introduced, and then simply do the same thing with a different set of information, and then support embracing that, rather than then going back to disrupt it. So someone will say, you know, okay, I'm going to do this about being healthy. I'm going to do this about being abundant. They'll do it for a week, and then they go back to the old way of doing things, and they disrupt them. Mm. They've done, and they go back to normal. So that's the first thing. And then we have to look at how these new stories are actually accepted. Mm. People say, I've been doing my affirmations. Yeah, but words aren't what your inner self are listening to. They're listening to the emotional context, the energetic imprint of those words. I can sit here and say, I hate you, Dean. I hate you so much. You're laughing because there's no hate energy there. So there's no communication and imprint of hate. It's regardless of what the words are, the energy that was behind it was something else. And so, okay, we understand that we have to look at, well, where does it come from? Well, our environment. My son, you said your son's 21. My son turns one next week, all right? Mm. So I've been looking at Ethan, learn to wave goodbye, for example. Ethan, so my wife's Russian. She speaks Russian to him. Our nanny's Mexican. I speak English. So he's hearing three languages, right?
Wow.
So he's making sense of all these languages, but he's literally looking at what's being done, copying. So he's seeing when we're going, we wave at him. A couple of months ago, he just started waving back. Nobody said, this is how you move the sinew using your hand. This is the muscle thing. This is the brain synapses that has to fire. Just copied his environment, took it in. Now that's a new behavior, which has been supported by us continuing to. And now, bye-bye. Even if someone's not leaving, if they're going towards the door, he goes like this. He starts waving to say goodbye, right? It's the same thing with the speaking. Even his accent, one of the most amazing things that's been interesting, my stepdaughter's six. Her mum's Russian. She grew up in the States. She's been with me here in Mexico for a couple of years now. I've got an English accent. So certain words that she says have got an English twinge. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't. She's got all her cousins are American. So she listens to her cousins. She's got these like da da da. And she's got these things. Nobody told her. The brain's taking in the information and then forming this whole pattern. And that becomes a behavior that's going to be, and she's getting to the point now where the analytical function is going to set in, it's going to set. So to bring this back to what we're saying, your environment, which you are observing unconsciously as much as 97% of the time, is taking in messages, and the messages that support a narrative find foothold. Those that have got no home don't go anywhere. Someone running around saying they're abundant and yet still shopping on the discount aisle, still keeping, you know, crappy broken things in the house, still being a cheapskate, there's no foothold for that new mm-hmm. input. Mm-hmm. When that input is supported, it might take some time to shake the old one loose at first, but sustaining, consistently introducing an input that matches you supporting it with your ongoing conscious behaviors allows it to come in. So that's what we're doing. We're looking at the fact that our environment, supported by our conscious choices and what we're doing, allow that new pattern to settle in. And once that clicks in, we no longer have to tell our hand what to do. We'll just start waving goodbye to lack, sadness, to poverty, and all that icky stuff.
Well, you bring in an interesting point, and I'm curious to see how you respond to this. So if our environment has such an important imprint in how our mind works and our mindset, mm-hmm. all right, so I'm listening to this little podcast, and I'm going, all right, this sounds great, but I'm surrounded by really negative people. I have a boss that I hate, and it's so mm-hmm. negative. Even the environment that I'm in, there's fluorescent lights and I don't see the outside world, you know, all mm-hmm. that sort of stuff is certainly a part mm-hmm. of many people's lives. What's our process, Daniel, to be able to reprogram our brain when the mm-hmm. external environment isn't conducive to what we want to manifest?
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you another part of the story. After losing everything the second time, I was so beaten down that I actually wanted to commit suicide. The only mm-hmm. reason why I didn't make an attempt is because I had such little self-belief that I thought if I tried to pull off the suicide, I'd fail. And I didn't want to be a loser who couldn't even end their life.
It's kind of ironic.
It's ironic.
Yeah.
So I went off on a journey to fix my limiting beliefs around committing suicide so that I could pull off my suicide successfully. And so I spent a couple of years pummeling myself with positive content, not to try and fix myself and be a positive person, but so that when I do go off to do the suicide thing, it's going to work.
I'm sorry for laughing. It must have been a tragic situation, but it's almost like a Seinfeld episode, right?
It's exactly that. It's exactly that. But fast forward 4 or 5 years after that, you know, going to, yeah, a good 2013, 2014, maybe 5 or 6 years, I was doing maybe good six figures in my business at the time. I don't think I was quite at seven yet. I was living in a beautiful home. I was traveling first class. I had a tailor. I had some nice watches. I was in healthy relationships with people. I was I wasn't in a romantic relationship at the time. I was dating, but my life was good. And I realized, oh my goodness, I was trying to commit suicide. What happened to that?
Yeah.
It wasn't a conscious choice. There was no light bulb moment. But even in the darkest of circumstances, the time that you spend consciously directing your awareness has an impact on what even settles in from the environment. Remember, we said something from the environment that doesn't match what's going on the inside still can't work. So even if there's a negative environment, if there's a positive choice on the conscious time, there's going to be a disconnect. Just the same when it's the other way around, where there's a positive environment or input and a negative stance, there's going to be a disconnect. There has to be an alignment between the two. So it doesn't matter if your environment is icky. If you are pulling from that environment positive and choosing to consciously input into yourself positivity, even in the face of the most seemingly insurmountable circumstances, you can still create a disconnect with that negativity and create space for you to perhaps make the difficult choice about the relationship. Yeah, make the hard choice about the career. Make the hard choice about moving to a different place.
Yeah, what I think you're saying, and I would put it in this term, is that the contrast of where you are can actually be quite a motivator to move you into a new space, into a new way 100%. Of thinking. I remember when 100%. I got divorced when I was young. On a very intuitive sort of whim, I decided to move back to Seattle, Washington, and to start this business. This is back in 1992, so I'm dating myself here a bit. But nonetheless, I remember I was renting a house from a friend that was no longer going to be there. So I took over her lease. And this place was an absolute pit. I mean, it was bad. And in fact, when I started dating my soon-to-be wife, I would never show her this place. It was just that awful, right? I mean, I remember just like, it was just not a safe place and so forth. But I started the business in this little rat hole. And it was such a motivator for me to go, I am not going to be here very long. This is just temporary. It was one of the best things that ever happened to me, because if I had it too easy and I had somebody sort of, you know, flipping the bill for me, I probably would have taken a lot longer to get where I was. And I remember I lost the job that I had, which was waiting tables. And I thought, how dare you fire me? You know? And my wife said at the time, this is the best thing that ever happened to you, because it was that contrast. It forced me into a new way of thinking. And so I hear what you're saying. I think that we can take a look at COVID. We could take a look at these last 2 years. And it's not an easy task by any stretch of the imagination, but it's that choice to go in a different way and to start bringing in new things.
And that's the key word there, is choice. Because, so for example, when I was rebuilding, I was in a call center, like I said, 6 months working in this call center, and I was living in a house share. And I've shared this story somewhere else, but there was a three-bedroom terraced house. Okay, for those of you who are familiar with English architecture.
Yeah.
So you got two floors. They converted the roof, but they converted all the downstairs living areas into rooms too. So the front room was converted into a living area. We shared a bathroom there. We shared a kitchen. There was a kitchen on the second floor with a shared bathroom. And they converted the loft into another studio. I was paying £80 a week. In the end, I had to leave because when rain came in, it was going through the light and it wasn't safe for me to be there anymore.
Yeah.
So I had to pack up my stuff and leave. And I think I ended up on my brother's sofa for a little bit until I found something else. But the point being, I was in that place, right? Instead of me going to get a nicer place, at first, I invested the money that I'd managed to scratch together with the business when I first started it and went invested in an office instead. And when, again, I was making enough money, I could have got a nicer place. I went and got a couple of nice suits and a half-decent car on lease instead. And I used that so that, yes, where I was sleeping was not that great, right? But I was spending my days in a lovely office building that I paid top dollar for. I'm driving back and forth in my car, again, having that time to ground and center myself and then go into the contrast and say, okay, what's next? What are we going to do?
Yeah.
And then within, where are we going now? It's 2013. By 2014, I'd moved into a nice home. By 2015, summer, I was doing six figures a month in that business.
Yeah. That's great. I remember, mm-hmm. it reminded me of a story when I was telling you about, we have this place now up in Bend, Oregon. We still, our business is still, and we still have a place down in Phoenix as well. But when we found this house that we just absolutely fell in love with, it was a bit of a long shot to try to pull this thing off. And so we were renting a place up here, waiting to find the right place, and we found it. And I remember mm-hmm. it took about, I don't know, you know, about 5-6 weeks for the closing to happen. I so wanted this place. I would mm-hmm. drive down every morning and have coffee in the local coffee shop in the neighborhood that would soon be mine, because mm-hmm. I wanted to put my energy in that space mm-hmm. and I wanted to hang around with those people and I wanted mm-hmm. to see what they saw. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. even though I didn't have the keys to the front door, I wanted mm-hmm. to already have my energy there. And mm-hmm. it was like almost a religious thing. Every day I'd go down there and do that before I started my work. I think it had an effect on our ability to attract this place.
You were claiming it. You were
absolutely, you
were rejecting the idea that having it was not a part of your reality by absolutely. Having it showing up every day.
Absolutely. Well, tell me a little bit about, I know I was looking at your website, and you've got this phrase that kind of caught my attention: emotional mastery with money. Good alliteration, by the way. But it was one of the things that I think you teach. What is emotional mastery with money?
So one of the things I love to ensure that I do is I dispel the fungal dungle gobbledygook that likes to come around some of this stuff. I think truth is simple. It doesn't need to be, you don't need a PhD to get the truth, right? You can just get it. Really, because you can just feed it and then the words just match that. But emotional mastery for me is understanding that this thing we talk about, vibe, frequency, it's a measurable thing. It's the state that we're in. And because everything's got a magnetic field around it, we're calling in or rejecting things that match the resonance of the field that we're in. Our emotional state is a way that we can decipher or determine where we're at in terms of that emotional scale. And that's a measurable thing. You know, we're not talking woohoo here. This is measurable. So emotional mastery with money at its core is understanding what the signature is, the emotional signature is for us with any amount of money. So for someone that wants to be a millionaire, they might think, oh, I'm going to be this and I'm going to be that. But you haven't actually sat down and explored, when I sit with the vision of me as a millionaire, what are the emotions that I have in that space? That's the GPS coordinates for you to go and have money by you being in that emotional state. So then the emotional mastery is learning to support you having those emotions on a more regular basis through your environment, through what you're doing, through your self-talk. We introduce our concept of money DNA. So you know, basically have to have the most flow with what you're doing. But we introduce flow so that we're in that state more consistently. That sets us into be that quote unquote frequency, so we can have a closer resonance with those experiences. That might be an opportunity. It might mean things falling in your lap, or it might just mean the possibilities are more available for you to step up and do the work of calling them into your life.
So on the very surface, and I want to probably call out a question that maybe some would be wondering. On the surface, one would say, "Oh, I would love to have $1 million or mm-hmm. six-figure monthly income. I mean, that's mm-hmm. a no-brainer, you know." Mm-hmm. And yet, I don't. So there's something else that must be in the way. It's mm-hmm. not me. It's you know, that we can place blame outside of ourselves. So what's the mindset that's really driving people from not having that abundance that they want?
Mm-hmm. First and foremost, one of the funny things I've learned, so my signature program is called Micro to Millions. And the big promise is we take you from zero to 1.6 million and beyond if you want. We give you a step-by-step guide. The key thing is you don't put another penny into the program. We get you from zero with nothing else to wherever you want on the scale. And you know one of the funniest things I've learned on the last 3 years of teaching that program, Dean? A lot of people don't want to be a millionaire.
Why is that?
Do you know what? One of the funniest stories is a woman called Kim. And this is going to make you laugh. She comes in gung-ho. Within about 3 months, she gets to a few steps. And we've got a specific system that we follow. So it's 14 steps from zero to a million. She got to like step six. And she's like, I'm really, really happy. I'm like, what? She goes, I'm really happy. I love what I'm doing. She loved painting houses. She was obsessed with painting houses. She loved it. She goes, I've seen this little boat. She was up in Vancouver Island. She's still there, Vancouver Island, Canada. She goes, yeah, I've seen this boat. I think it was like 5 or 6 grand Canadian or whatever. So he goes, and it's got like $100 for me to moor this boat. And with my house covered, I need a little bit to live, and I make more than that painting houses. I'm good. Mm. I don't want to. Mm. I'm actually happy. And I was like, are you sure? Are you not quitting? No, I'm not quitting. Seriously. So I wrestled with this. I meditated on this. I'm really happy. And we've seen that with people that have gotten to like a couple hundred grand. Some people that just paid off the mortgage. One guy got to like $500,000. And he was like, I've just had so much fun. Like, if I make some more money, I'm good. But I'm just really, really happy now. And then I've seen some people that, you know, they want to work with us beyond the original program. And, you know, they work more close with me to go and make 8 figures, make 9 figures. But we've seen people that have stopped all the way along because they're genuinely happy with what they've achieved. I love that because they've actually come to understand what their true desire is, not what the world says that they should want to do.
I love that. And what about the mindset that says, I'm making $150,000 a year. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty good. This is a pretend person out there. Mm-hmm. I have a mindset that says to go to a million, I'm going to have to work a lot harder and the stress involved is not worth it to me.
Well, that's the people that come to us. The people who are, I mean, people that come to it, for example, one-on-one or do a VIP day with me, they're making a few hundred thousand, you know, or they're making a few million and they want to go to the next level. But the idea of going to the next level, they've got those questions. Or yeah, they're making $500,000, $600,000, $1 million a year in their business or their career, but their health is shot. They don't know who their kids are. Their marriage is falling apart. Or they're burnt out because they're, again, coming back to abundance is easy. They're in this, I have to kill or be killed. I have to pay the price. I have to burn out instead of let's click into your money DNA and find where the natural flow is for you. Let's make a tweak. You don't even necessarily need to leave your career. Let's find a way that the career clicks into a space of flow so that you can have that financial remuneration, but not have the emotional, mental cost, the spiritual cost, the familial relationship cost. So we people see people across the board, but our whole thing is you can make more expending less. Now, I work a lot more than I need to because I love what I do. My wife hates the fact that that's the case because really I could probably sit around and I mean, I've got coaches. I don't have to do any of the coaching, but I enjoy doing certain aspects of the coaching.
Yeah.
I'm podcast, I don't know, 5 to 10 podcasts a week on average. I love doing it. Do I need to do it? Yeah. It's a great strategy to connect with people to meet new people, but I don't need to do it. We still do well, but I love it. Now, what about if the time that you were spending making that 150 or that 1.5 or that 3 million a year, the time that you were spending felt good and it wasn't costing you relationships with your family, it wasn't costing you relationship with your health, wasn't costing you relationship with yourself, it wasn't burning you out, it wasn't taking 20 million hours a week to do. It felt like you were doing as much as you felt like doing, as much as you were filled up doing, but weren't doing any more than that. So for example, I stopped working mid-October. My sister and my brother-in-law came to visit. My wife's birthday was last week. My birthday was Sunday. My stepdaughter's on Saturday. My son's next week. So I'm not really doing anything. I'm meeting cool people like you and doing some podcasting. After that, I'm going to go home and play with the kids. If I wanted to, I could have said, Amy, we're not doing any podcasts until January. Yeah. And my income wouldn't change.
Right, right.
It's a very different way to approach the whole formula of creating wealth.
Well, tell more about this program you're talking about, because I also want to lead into how people can connect with you in the future.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you. Well, the first question that I was, when people say, what's this program? I say, here's the question I ask. If I gave you, Dean, $500,000, I waved a magic wand. I said, you've got no more money blocks, no more emotional blocks. You're good. Tapped you on the head with my magical fingers. You've got no limiting beliefs. And I gave you the roadmap on exactly how to turn $500,000 into $1 million. Could you do it?
Yeah.
Okay. If you take $100 and do that process 14 times, you've got 1.6 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. What we do is different. That's different is this. Number one, are you familiar with the work of Lynn McTaggart?
Another name.
Yeah, Lynn McTaggart. Yeah, she basically scientifically demonstrated that if 8 people hold an intention, the fiber reality changes. She did the science on this, right?
Right, right.
So at every step of the way, we have group intentions that we teach you how to tap into so that you get the compound effect of everybody that's ever done this and ever will, then pushing you through each step, number one. Mm. Number two, we teach you how to develop an emotional resonance with each of these phases of money based on you as an individual. The next thing, in terms of limiting beliefs, rather than going around and doing the shadow work and digging out what all your limiting beliefs are, we show you how to bypass limiting beliefs at each individual step. And then we give you a roadmap based on your individual money DNA for you to make your way through each of those steps. We then have a community. We've got different levels of support that people can come in at. But essentially, we take you from $0 to $100, and then we'll take you through that process all the way up to as much as you want to go. And once you finish those 14 steps, we've got the mastermind and stuff like that for people that want to play at a higher level. But we find that people that do the million, on average, have done it in 9 to 10 months. The people that are like, I'm going to do it. Right now, I just committed last week, Friday, I do a live vlog every week in the group for our guys. And we had a few guys that joined in because this was, when I opened it up, I had it closed. It was closed for about 2.5 years. It was only this year we started to let more people in and look at different ways to make it a bit more open to people. So we had some guys that jumped in earlier this year. We were testing some stuff. And so I started again about 4 months ago from zero. And I've been vlogging my journey every week and showing what I've been doing. And I made a commitment last week. I was like, wouldn't it be cool if I can do the rest of the steps in the next six months? So I've set myself a target of seeing how far I can get between now and the 1st of May. And I'm letting people follow me on that journey and stuff like that. So we've seen people do it in that. We've seen people create financial freedom in 60 days. We've seen people able to leave their job, people be able to retire the rest of their family and move to different states, move to different country. We've seen all sorts of really cool things happen. And we've also seen people get to be a millionaire in less than a year.
Fantastic. So again, how can people connect with you?
Dreamwithdan.com, easiest place to come and find me, dreamwithdan.com. We've got a load of free resources. We've got a contact page on there. I'd encourage people to check out the free resources. Look at how we do things. There's a free video there called How to Be a Harmonious Money Magnet. It will give you an insight to the approach that we take to wealth creation and abundance creation. It's like, I don't know, about 30, 40 minutes, free video, give you value if you go and do that. But if it's something that then resonates with you, get in touch and we'll see if there's a way that we can support you more.
Sounds great. Daniel's been great to meet you.
And you, looking forward to do what? I have to get you on my podcast too, actually. I think we have to do that.
That sounds great. I would love it.
I'm going to get Amy to hook that up.
Fantastic.
Thank you for listening to The Business of Intuition. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about Dean or Mission Facilitators Leadership, go to mfileadership.com. That's mfileadership.com.